Okay, so we'll be getting started. So everyone has either a piece of candy or a tangerine. Okay. So let's begin by settling the mind from the busyness of getting here and all things that have happened today. So just get into your meditation posture and try to relax the tension in your face, your neck, your shoulders, your jaws. And focus lightly on your in-breaths and your out-breaths. Either going through your nostrils or your chest, your abdomen rising and falling. And if you have a problem following your in-breath or your out-breath, in your mind you can say in and then breathe in. And out as you breathe out. So let's say that and be sure to recall your motivation for coming here tonight. And let's start with that. I'll sound the bell once to begin and once to end. Okay. Anyone like to discuss any obstacles or problems? Just bring, or questions? Yes. Hold on. Just wait for the mic. It's over here in the green shirt.
I was wondering, in the exercise that we did over the week, where we were, and I couldn't figure out just what role the sky played in this whole thing. Was it the object of meditation? And if so, what happened to the breath? So I couldn't figure out what the sky was doing. So
right. For the meditation on the mind like the sky, the meditation object is the mind, not the breath. And then what is the mind? You know, it's clear like the sky. And so we use the sky as an analogy to help us understand what the sky is, what the mind is, the definition of mind, that it's clear and knowing. So the clarity, the sky, no clouds. That's one of the great meditations on the mind, on the clarity of the mind. Okay, that's an analytical meditation. Any other questions, or want to tell them, share how things are coming along? Okay, so now I'd like to talk further about the three types of meditation. I mentioned that earlier. So the three types, there's review meditation, analytical meditation, and concentration meditation. Now this is after you probably have, grasped some calm abiding skills. So first, for review meditation, perhaps you go to a class and you hear a teacher explaining a certain topic. So then you may go back to your desk or to your home, whatever, and then you review what your lecture notes or what the person, the teacher, has said. And for this and for the analytical meditation, you don't have to have perfect quiet. You don't even have to have a concentration cushion. You know, that's not required at all. So that's review meditation. In analytical meditation, you take the topic of that you have studied, that you've reviewed over and over, and you analyze it from different angles, different perspectives, and until you think you understand the topic, what the teacher has tried to explain. And then you come to a particular conclusion or a heartfelt understanding of that teaching. It might even come as an aha moment, or it can be as deep as making a shift in your mind or the perspective of that topic. It might deepen your understanding of the topic. So that's that conclusion that you got from that understanding of the topic that you had reviewed before. And then for concentration meditation, you concentrate single-pointedly on that realization that you have, you know, that has come to your mind, that mind shift that has really deepened your understanding of the topic. And then that's how you progress. You know, and your understanding increases, expands, and becomes more profound. So those are the three objects of meditation. Okay, so now we're going to do the mindful eating practice. So if you came in late and you didn't get a piece of candy or a tangerine, you're welcome to go get one right now, but don't eat it yet. Until I tell you. Again, okay. Okay. Now just take your piece of candy or your tangerine and just look at it. Look at your candy, your wrapper, your tangerine, the orangeness of it, whatever. Now pick it up and either peel the tangerine or remove the candy wrapper. And set the peel on the paper side. And then look at either the segment of the tangerine or the piece of candy. And notice the color and shape of the object. And smell its fragrance. And then imagine while you're looking at it, all the things that had to come together in order for this piece of candy, this piece of fruit, to be here in your hand now. For the tangerine, the fruit trees came from a seed, and it had to be nurtured by fertile soil, rainwater, the sun, moderate temperatures for years, for it to finally bear fruit that's large enough to be this size so that can be consumed. And then for the, and then also after the tangerine has grown to that size and it's ripe or almost ripe, then the farmer had to pick the tangerines from the trees. And for the candy, of course, there are very many different ingredients in the candy, and they all had to come together to be collected and processed and formed into the candy that was packaged. And then all these items had to be shipped by truck to a warehouse where it was packaged. And then it was ordered by the grocery store, and it came to the grocery. And all these had to happen in order for us to have this food. Now, take a bite, or if you have, you know, just a small piece of candy, just put it in your mouth. And you can just take one segment of the tangerine and feel the food rolling around in your mouth. Don't swallow yet. If you swallow, take another one. Take a piece, another, and feel the food in your mouth and savor it. Chew it very slowly and don't swallow until it turns into a liquid. Try to chew it about 30 to 50 times before you swallow it until it is just pure liquid. And then continue eating like this, thinking about, you know, where it came from and so forth. Or until you no longer want to eat it, especially if you had a tangerine, you could just have one segment. But eat it slowly, extremely slowly and mindfully. Does anyone have any questions or comments about our mindfulness practice? Okay. I may not have finished, but I'm going to move on. Okay, so now I'm going to read the meditation on transforming negative experiences into the positive. So you can get back into your meditation posture. Sit comfortably. And since we've already settled our minds, we can start with the actual meditation. Spend a few moments thinking about your day and the experiences that you have had during the day. Focus especially on difficult situations that may have arisen, situations in which you may have become impatient, lost your temper, seen others as problems or enemies, perhaps even lashed out at others verbally. Remembering that the situation is over, that you are simply experiencing memories now of something that is gone and is now in the past, bring a difficult situation to mind. Remember what happened from beginning to end. Watch and observe your mind and your behavior as you replay the situation. Use all the techniques and abilities of mindfulness that you have learned in order to disidentify with those feelings and actions as much as possible, to simply watch and observe dispassionately. Now think about the disadvantages and harmful nature of the negative responses that took place during that situation. Think about how you felt while being impatient and angry. Did you feel happy, comfortable, at peace? When that angry feeling led to angry words and actions, what effect did that have on you, on others around you? Did it make them happy? Did it make the situation easier? Did the angry behavior help bring the situation to a positive solution? Did it help everyone, yourself, and the others included, to feel good and understand each other better? Now think about how you might have handled the situation differently with a calm, balanced, and open attitude, without anger or impatience or resentment. Think about how your and others' experience of the situation might have been completely different. Generate a strong feeling of how extraordinary it would be to be able to manage difficult situations just like this one, with a calm and peaceful mind, uncontrolled by anger and agitation. Now replay the entire situation in your mind from beginning to end, imagining it completely differently. Relive the situation and imagine yourself reacting perfectly with warm and openness toward the other people, with calm and balance, and without any anger or agitation. Imagine how the situation might have played itself out in this totally different way. Is the outcome different? How do you feel about yourself at the end of the interchange? Pleased or disappointed? What kind of experience do others have in your replay? Positive or negative? Make a strong determination that the next time you encounter difficulties that try your patience, you will take a breath and a step back. You will try to respond with openness and patience as you did in your meditation. Keeping your mind under control and out of the control of anger. In addition, make a strong determination that each time you find yourself responding with impatience, agitation, and anger in the future, you will practice this same meditation in order to gradually overcome those negative response patterns and train the mind to respond with kindness, balance, and patience. Okay, does anyone have any questions or comments? This is a very difficult thing to do. You know, it's easy to actually do the meditation practice, but to do it in the workplace, in a difficult situation, I think requires a little bit more understanding of, well, if you're a Buddhist, a more understanding of certain Dharma teachings before you can get to the point where you can just go and transform a situation there on the spot like this. Because everyone wants to be happy. No one wants to suffer. No one wants to have problems. And I just wanted to say a couple of things, which might hopefully will help. It just came to mind while I was thinking about this meditation. The most important person in your life, in your world, is yourself. There's no one more important than you. And if you have to understand who yourself and why you behave in a certain way under all these circumstances before you can even try to understand anyone else. And one way is to look at your own life situation and think about what kind of challenges you're facing right now. What is your life situation right now? Maybe you had some kind of important life event that happened to you. And it could have been 6 months ago. It could have been 3 years ago. It could be a divorce, a death in the family, terrible sickness, your own sickness. It could be a change in careers, you know, job layoffs, things like that. And so you have to understand that that has a lot to do with the way you're behaving right now. You know, you have to understand that, okay, something horrible happened to me. I'm kind of depressed right now. Oh, they have to go to work, you know, in about a week. I'm going to have to snap out of it right now. Okay. And maybe you could do that for a while. Maybe you can even, I was able to actually do quite a bit. This was before I was a Buddhist. I could turn my face around at work and I could just immediately just try to almost forget anything that was happening in my life at home, in my home life, my marriage life. And I could focus on work and block it out. But that doesn't help. You know, you're blocking it. It doesn't solve the problem. But then you can understand why maybe you're lashing out at your children at home or whatever. You know, you have to understand that maybe you're at work doing your best because you have to pay your bills, you have to feed the children, and you always have to smile, and the customer is always right, the boss is always right, and you just have to, you know, keep all your emotions down, because it really could be a life or death situation for you if you lose this job, you know. So you have a lot of pressure, a lot of stress in life. So you have to really keep that in mind. And then, of course, I think one another important thing is that sometimes you have to take some time aside and see what you really want to accomplish in life. What is your real purpose in life? What really matters? And see if you're heading toward that goal. And so that years after you've finished your career, after you've retired, when you're dying, and you can think, you know, you can think back and you feel good that you did your best, that you have a sense of fulfillment, that you put great effort toward that goal. And that goal might be having the best education, the best job, the best house, you know, in the neighborhood, whatever. So you might be frustrated about someone or something, some situation getting in the way of that goal, your life goal. It could be anything. It could be your own health. It could be stress at home or at work. It could be some kind of natural disaster that happened. Family obligations. You know, someone getting sick. These things happen. So what you may have to end up doing is, if your life, daily life, is full of this frustration and stress, maybe you need to reevaluate your goals and your meaning in life. Maybe it's not what it was, what you had perceived it to be. You know, maybe you need to step back and lower your expectations, or even make a complete career change. You know, you need to take some time to reevaluate your life. If it seems like every day you go out, you're having a negative experience. You know, and maybe it doesn't have anything to do with what you're coming up against. You know, your job, your boss, your teachers, whatever. And and then see if whether or not, you know, it's contributing to your overall well-being. Is this how I want to spend the rest of my life? Like that. So every day, well, frequently in our lives, we encounter problems. And the reason is we live in an imperfect world with imperfect people. There's always problems. And we're not perfect, so we're going to make mistakes. So problems will always happen, and we all want to be happy. So we're trying to find a way to stop these problems, stamp out fires, solve these problems. And then it might be fine, and we think we're happy because there aren't any problems right now. We kind of reach a plateau. It's kind of quiet. And then another problem emerges. And then immediately your peace is gone. And your sense of happiness is gone. You know, you get sick. A tornado hits your house. You know, you have a flat tire, whatever. And then you don't, you know, and then you think, okay, I'll fix this flat tire, and then things will be fine, and I'll be happy again. And you think, you know, you have this idea, the fairy tale, you know, you live happily forever after. But if you have this understanding that because this world is as it is, that you're going to always face and run into problems regularly, the basket will always be full, no matter what, then you're just going to equip yourself with the objects, the whatever, things that will help you face these problems. So that if a problem comes up, you think, oh yes, that's the way that life is. That's the nature of our existence. This is the way life is. There'll be a problem. And then when there aren't any problems and it seems like things are going really, really well, then you can also have the sense of equanimity that, sure, this is fine, you know, but you don't have to be, first of all, you shouldn't have the expectation that it's going to last forever. And also that it's not going to be, it's not going to be the lasting happiness that you think. And the things are always changing. You know, things are disintegrating. Our bodies are disintegrating moment by moment. You know, and then babies are being born and people are dying. Young people too. So if you accept that, then you won't be blown away when something really happens, when a crisis happens, you know. And then what happens that once you understand that, when you get that understanding that there are going to be problems and that maybe you have some kind of a way to face them, some kind of protocol, algorithm, whatever. And then you get this shift that say, oh, this happens to everyone. It's not just me, you know, it's happening to everyone. Everyone at least in my neighborhood, is feeling the effects of this hurricane, you know. Everyone in this company, or many of the people in this company, are being laid off, not just me. And then when that happens, suddenly you recognize that the kinship that you have with all the people around you, and the people in the world, even animals, and you feel this commonality, and this humanity comes out. And then you're no longer controlled by this afflicted mind, these disturbing emotions that arise. Anger doesn't arise. Jealousy doesn't arise. You know, ignorance doesn't arise. And then we can transform those negative emotions that usually come up into positive ones. And then you understand that all the people at work and the people that you meet, you know, in traffic, that are angry at you, yell at you, make obscene gestures. These people, they don't have this understanding of, you know, the fundamental understanding of life, of the life situation that we're in. And then you might feel compassion for them. And think, oh, he's only thinking of this one thing or whatever. And so when problems arise, this warm heart, this compassion comes up, and it comes up spontaneously. And then you will have, and then as your practice deepens and your understanding deepens, then the problems subside and they don't look like problems anymore. You know, there are challenges in life, there are difficulties, but then they don't seem that big anymore. because you just think, oh, that's just life. You know, why should I think any different that I'm having this problem, that this is happening, that I'm sick, or whatever, I'm dying, or I've lost some money in the stock market, whatever. Okay, so now I'd like to shift topics to the objects of meditation. So when we were first trying to achieve concentration, we do so in relation to a single object of meditation, as I mentioned before, when I was talking about the breath. And this is to give you stability in your awareness. If you shift objects around, jumping around, here and then you prevent your stability and you fatigue the mind. And that's why they want you to stick to one object. Now, in the beginning, of course, you know, you have the opportunity to decide which one you want. But then once you do, you need to stick to it. And the object can be the breath. The breath is an adequate object of meditation, and you don't really have to add anything else. It's a soothing way to calm the conceptually disturbed mind, and it can help you achieve calm abiding. Other things you could, some people use color, some people use a flower, and others, such as the people in the Buddhist tradition, choose a holy image. And if you are in a different faith, you could use the image of Jesus or the Virgin Mary or some other deity of your religion, and then you fix your attention on it. You might look at an image and you scrutinize it, where the hands are placed, you know, the position of the body, legs, torso, and you gaze at it till you become very familiar with its appearance by visually looking at it. Then you close your eyes and you simulate that image mentally with your imagination, and then you maintain that awareness. So it's not a visual thing, it's a mental thing. It's an imagination, something you imagine. Okay, and then at first if you can't see the entire object in detail, then you might remember the position of the hands. And so you focus on that. And then you might go to another part. You know, just try to remember each part. And if it's not clear, if the parts aren't clear, then you try to bring your attention, or you focus on the entire object again. And then, of course, at the beginning, it's not going to be very clear. But then, you know, you just keep trying over and over and over again. And then you might be able to sustain it for a minute, and then maybe a couple minutes, and then you just keep going on and on like that until you can get, a clear mental image of your object of meditation, if you want to do a holy image. And many people do that in Buddhism. They do it because they want to do the practice of Tantra, which is a very quick method of attaining enlightenment and liberation. So they do a lot of visualizations. They visualize like a mandala, which is like a universe, you know, so they do that also. So that's why they want to do it, because if you have the holy image, you want to have the inner qualities of that being, and so that's why many Buddhists also try to focus on a holy image. And another one object is the mind. That's really difficult. And that's the one where, we say, oh, what is the mind? The mind is clear and knowing. And then you do that meditation, mind like the sky, mind like the ocean. So you use the analogy to create this awareness of that empty space, the clarity of the mind. Yes, uh-huh.
So
Would you wait for the microphone? I think we're streaming. Yeah, we are streaming. Okay. And they can't hear.
So when you're talking about one object, are you talking about over multiple meditations on an object?
Yes, like the same one.
Okay, and just hold it until you get a good understanding of the object.
Until you can actually bring it up spontaneously for as long as you want.
Okay.
Like an hour, 2 hours, a whole day, 2 days, a week, like that. You sustain it that strongly. And this is not just a Buddhist practice. There's a non-Buddhist practice also. Okay. And now I'd like to talk about obstacles and antidotes to meditation. So the two main ones are laxity or lethargy, falling asleep, getting drowsy, or excitement. So with excitement, your mind is scattered outwardly. You know, you want, you're chasing things that you like or that you don't like. You know, you're trying to focus on this flower and all you can think about is what somebody said to you. In a negative way or a very nice way to you, and you can't focus on the picture, your mental image of the flower, you know, so you're distracted outwardly and you completely forget the object, you forget the flower. All you can think of is that distraction. So the antidotes are to focus, shift it from that object to your breath. Bring it to your breath and try to calm the mind because it's just all over the place. Or you can visualize the object as very heavy or small, extremely small, very small. or you can reflect on a sobering object like change or death, something like that. And it's not to get distressed or depressed, but to strengthen your determination to control your mind. And that's why you think. And then, of course, check your posture. You can lower the light and just try to be patient with yourself. So that's excitement. Now, for laxity, you are actually being distracted inwardly. You know, you've got the meditation, but it's your object, but it's very slack, very dim, because maybe you're sleeping. That could be it. So you don't see the object vividly at all. It's like you're trying to see something and you're blind or your eyes are shut. So what you do is you check your posture, make sure your back is straight. You open your eyes a little bit more. You increase the light. You might think of an inspiring object of meditation. You make the mind more expansive. Think of it as like the sky. You should get enough sleep. You can think of light. You can raise the light outside, you know, the actual room light. Or you can visualize your body full of light. Or you can go take a walk and wash your face and then come back and try again. So throughout your practice, you have tried to, you know, as I said before, try to go easy on yourself and maintain equanimity and acceptance. So that if you find that your meditation and concentration is not good, then you don't get disappointed. And if your concentration and your meditation session is going extremely well, you know, you're taking great leaps and your focus is wonderful, you don't really respond with great satisfaction either. And the reason is because you don't want to have this big letdown where the next time you do it, you can't, you know, you're completely excited and you're all over the place. And, of course, that things happen during the day. If you're doing it at night, things happen. And that's why you want to do it in the first thing in the morning, because nothing has really happened yet. So you're not, you know, you don't have this excitement. But if you do it later in the day, those, you know, you might get some hindrances to your practices, and that's why you need to have this equanimity and acceptance. So you accept what seem to be good sessions and what seem to be bad sessions, and just continue, you know, just maintain equanimity and keep going. Don't keep persevering in your practice. And now I'd like to do a sharing activity where you choose a partner and you talk about some of the problems you have with distraction in your meditation session. And I'll give you about 10 minutes, and then we'll come back. I'll sound the bell, and we'll come back, and then hopefully some people will share their experiences. Okay? So 10 minutes. Just one or two experiences. Okay, we're kind of finishing a few minutes early. Does anyone would like to share any of the distractions, obstacles to their meditation practice? So everybody's doing perfectly well. No, okay. Oh, up here, Jeff.
So I was talking with Mac and talked about a lot of the distraction that I have, or a lot of the purpose of me meditating and wanting to calm my mind is to help my golf game. And so oftentimes I'll have an image of like my golf swing, but it's more like a feeling kind of executing that golf swing while I'm meditating and trying to focus on my breath. And I'm curious if that kind of feeling and image is an acceptable kind of object of meditation to work on, because I don't want to meditate on feeling the right swing and then have the expectation that that's the way it would go, if that makes sense.
So, do you think you don't have any goal higher than that? You just want to make that perfect swing? So, would that hold your attention for a few weeks, few months, or would you want to move to something else?
To just make the swing proper?
Yeah.
Not really sure. I mean, all in all, the long-term goal is just to be the best player that I could be with respect to that.
Uh-huh.
So just making the good swing wouldn't be the only object, but that would be the way to do it, I would think.
Right. So, according to the teaching, that wouldn't be the right object because you're going to change it. Yeah. So, of course, there's nothing wrong in, imagining the perfect swing so that you'd be, as a form of training, for a better golf game, but to achieve calm abiding, to be able to achieve your, full concentration, you can't change the object. But if that's the only thing you want, that was the only thing that you want to concentrate on as an object, all the way through, then that's perfect. Just think of the swing. Over and over and over again.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Uh-huh. Thanks. Anyone else? Oh, in the back.
I was discussing that one of my biggest challenges right now, I think, is determining the difference between full understanding and, that idea that it's an imperfect world with imperfect people, and still recognizing the full breadth of human emotions and that they exist, and balancing, acceptance and understanding with still recognizing those exist, I guess. Like the negative ones.
Okay. So that's a lot. That's quite a bit. Yeah. Anyone else? Oh, right here in the sweater, gray sweater.
I probably have a lot of the silly normal ones, but I'll just pick one, and that's I was telling Chris, I'm pretty good throughout the day about not getting upset or agitated. I've pretty good, but then when I do, I have fallen all the way down to the bottom of the well. And so my it's not even anger. It's just like this agitation of feeling a little bit helpless if there's a situation where I know how I should be acting and I didn't act that way, or maybe I did act that way, but I still couldn't resolve the situation, and then getting my mind untwisted from that and back out to a place where I can focus on something else through my meditation.
I see. Okay, so that's like a life obstacle thing, yeah. So for that, if you didn't, in that process, you know, hurt someone's feelings or did anything like that, then all you have to do is think about yourself, how you're going to recover from that. And then it could be like, just as you do breathing meditation, just think that was a negative thought or an anger thought or a feeling of helplessness, whatever, of being lost, and then just let it go. And I did that before, and then I learned from that and just let it go and then continue. Just continue. And then if there's anything that guilt is terrible, you know, you might, your emotions can escalate and you can all of a sudden have all kinds of stories that happened, you know, oh, I'm going to get fired, oh, they think I'm a horrible person or whatever. So, you know, you want to stop that immediately and just think that, you know, in Buddhist practice, we have a purification practice, the four powers. And one of them is regret. You know, you did something. I'm going to try my best not to do it again. You know, at least for an hour or maybe 5 minutes or 5 seconds. And next time, I'm really going to try. I really am. Even though it's 5 seconds, I'm going to try to delay that response. And then, you know, you keep practicing, and pretty soon maybe 5 seconds will come to 30 seconds, 1 minute, and eventually, you know, it's going to go away. It's just that we are so habituated to reacting the same way we've done this so many times, you know, thousands of times, millions of times, over and over again. So we're used to responding in that way. But if you catch yourself, you know, or even observe yourself doing it, oh, look what's happening, then immediately that's progress. You know, it's just like hearing the sound and then saying, oh, that's a sound. I don't have to worry about it. It's just a sound. I'm not going to let it affect me. I'm just going to bring my focus back to my breath. And so that's what meditation practice is in my mind. This is my sense. What's the point of doing it if all you can do is focus and concentrate on your cushion? What's going to happen when you go out in life? What are you going to happen? What happens when the cat comes, sits on your lap, or your child screams, or your boss yells at you? What's the purpose of doing that just if you're going to have 5 minutes of peace? You know? So you have to eventually bring it into the rest of your, the life. You know, the other aspects of your life too. And so you know, just by recognizing it, that's amazing. You see, that's amazing. I saw what was going on in my mind. And you might even feel next time how your body is reacting. It's my breath. Oh, maybe your stomach is queasy, is tightening. Maybe your jaw is tightening. Maybe you're breathing fast. You might notice all those physical reactions too. And then maybe next time you recognize it right away. You know, maybe I need to go outside and take a walk. Or maybe I need to take a breath. You know, something's happening, and negative and happening. And so I need to take control as much as I can for at least 5 seconds. and then just continue and keep working on that. And just think that you're heading in the right direction. You're doing well. And, you know, you have this terrible expectation that it has to be a certain way, and you have to be reaching certain goals by a certain time. And I heard that in the space program, you know, and when they launch a rocket or a satellite, whatever, a shuttle, they're not really worried about whether it's exactly on course at all, just as long it's in that course. You know, just as long as it's heading in the right direction, they sort of lower their expectations. And so that's how you should be. You shouldn't be so tense, you know, and thinking it has to be this way, at this time, at this very moment. And just, you know, just let your mind relax and be expansive. And as long as you know you're heading in the right direction, then you should be fine and think, well, I'm making some immense progress, you know, and congratulate yourself. Okay, so I don't think we have time to do the mind like an ocean meditation. So for your homework, just continue your daily practice. And at the end of the day, try to reflect on your actions and see whether it matches what you had, your motivation was in the morning. And if you did any unskillful actions, you know, try to do better the next day. And if you did some very, you know, actions that were virtuous or positive, then you should think fine and just try to do even better tomorrow. And if you encounter a negative situation, just remember, try to recall this transforming negative experiences meditation and try to do that practice and see, you know, how maybe you could have done a little bit better or had a different response. And next week, we'll be talking about motivation, dedication, the benefits of meditation, everyday living, which we sort of covered today, the benefits of visualization meditation, purification with light meditation, and some stories about lamas and yogis. So now I'd like to just dedicate, may the positive energy we have created through the practice of mindful meditation bring peace and well-being to ourselves, our family, friends, and all others in every moment of every day. Thank you very much. And if you there's any left over, you can take a tangerine candy. Thank you very much.